celebrating in the East Stands. Taking a knee is Tanner Lee, and that will do it for this one. Nebraska is going to win it 28-6.
Didn't really let us get anything going running game-wise and passing game-wise. We're just not set up to, we're not a passing team. We'll get in passing situations is hard for us. I mean, kind of simple as that. And that's protection, accuracy, throwing the football, and, of course, catching it.
We have to play better. Simple as that. You know, the thing was for us to play a lot harder than we played last time and be more physical. Just kind of disappointed in our effort.
It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400, WDWS Champaign-Urbana. We'll get you caught up on your Illini sports news along with other area and national sports news. Here are Lauren Tate and Michael Kaiser.
Good Saturday morning. Thanks for joining us. 55 degrees, a beautiful weekend in store for East Central Illinois. Thanks for joining us once again. That was some highlights from the wrong team last night. Nebraska dominated that football game. Lovie Smith, obviously not happy with the performance, with the effort, as he mentioned. Also not happy just really overall with anything. And one thing that stuck out to me and Lauren, I don't know if you heard the radio interview, he said that we're not really a passing team. And I just go, then why do we have all these really good wide receivers on this team? Like, what's the point? I mean, you got to have them out there, of course, but you got to get the ball to Mikey Dudek. Ricky Smalling, I realize, is a freshman, but he has got immense talent. And I'm Malik Turner, and you're not getting the ball to playmakers.
And they didn't target Dorsey last night. When Dorsey's a terrific receiver as a tight end, of course, he's a freshman, and maybe he's, it's too early for him, but I think the conclusion was going into the game, obviously the game plan was to run the ball, and they did that successfully right down the field that first time with Crouch running a lot. As it turned out, he ran 18 times last night. So the obvious answer to your question is they felt they could run, and they felt that this was the way to beat Nebraska, was control the ball on the ground and with interspersed passes. Now, Crouch was 9 out of 15 passing, but not very impressive, nothing down the field, and they're not getting the ball, as you said, to Dudek, who had two catches, one very late after the game was over, practically. So I don't know. I don't know why they didn't use the same game plan that they did at South Florida when you saw the thing was getting away and you need passing to get back in it. And by the way, Nebraska began to stop the running game after it had shown some success early. And I don't know why they didn't bring in Jeff George, but they didn't. And now we find out that Cam Thomas, who is the freshman quarterback who has not played, will not play. He's now been suspended from the team.
Indefinitely.
Sounds like he's going to be redshirted. I mean,
that was the plan anyway.
That's what it amounts to. So this is no great loss to the team, except they're awfully thin at quarterback. And Crouch took a lot of hits last night and got up and kept playing.
Cam Thomas, with that suspension, leaves only two scholarship quarterbacks on the Illini football team. They have Cam Miller, who will now be the third-string option most likely for the Illini. If you remember, they got down that far in the depth chart last year when Wes Lunt got hurt and then Chase Crouch got hurt, and they put Jeff George in the game last season. His first start was against Michigan at the Big House, of all places. So it's very possible the third-string option will matter. Most times it does not. But again, the hope, you know, was for Cam Thomas not to play this year, as Lauren just said, and we just said, so we'll see what happens there. But I'm going to go back to the 18 carries for Chase Crouch. He needs to run the football, and we've talked about it on the show. He's a running quarterback, needs to be a dual threat quarterback. I think that's too many carries for him. I don't think he needs to be. Let me rephrase that. I don't think he needs to have the most carries on the team. He had 8 more carries than your best running back on the team, Mike Epstein. He had 10.
He had the same number as all three running backs. They had 18. But
that makes no sense to me.
Well, first of all, part of it was scrambles. He made some nice scrambles, number one, which were intended pass plays and turned out to be scrambles. Second, on the option, you have to take what you get. Mm-hmm. And if they're gonna leave the opening for you to cut up, you have to cut up the field. I mean, that's what the option is. So you have situations where he has the option to run or pitch. And obviously, sometimes last night, there were a number of times early when he kept, and found good yardage. That's the thing. The two marches that Illinois had that got inside the 10-yard line and got field goals, and unfortunately didn't get touchdowns, those two marches were he was very much involved in the running game in those cases. I'm just saying to you that this was their plan. This was their that's why they had him in there. If they were going to pass the ball, if they felt that this that they could be successful passing the ball, I'm sure that they would have treated it different and probably had George in the ball game.
What do you take from Jeff George's performance against South Florida in terms of South Florida's defense? Was that a good barometer of what Jeff George could be? He threw for 222 yards.
With two interceptions.
Yeah, and I get that. But he threw for 222 yards. Mm-hmm. When's the last time we've had a quarterback throw for 222 yards?
Sometimes those are misleading. He threw a 5-yard pass to Smalling that turned into a 74-yard gain. I think he's in that. It's perfectly obvious. The moment he comes in the game, you can see it. He's a natural passer.
Yeah.
He just comes. You see that as soon as he's in the ball game. But when you do that, you give up an awful lot of the running game, and I don't think they wanted to do that against Nebraska. There seemed to be some vulnerabilities in the Nebraska defense early.
Yeah.
Now, I say early. Illinois marched off the whole first quarter. I mean, they took the ball right down the field, and they ran. They had one completed pass, and they marched all the way to the 3-yard line. But then they had the minus 5 on a sweep by Crouch, and that forced them into a field goal situation.
They had that one drive, the first drive that you referenced in there, 15 plays, 64 yards, lasted 9 minutes.
Yeah.
So a very impressive drive.
That was their plan.
Yeah, and that looked good at the time, but as you mentioned, Nebraska slowed things down a little bit. But what also stood out to me, and I was spotting for Brian last night, so I was just trying to keep an eye on where the ball was and who had the ball, so I couldn't watch the line play as much as maybe you got to in that game. But I just think that they're, and this is maybe obvious, freshmen on the defensive line are just going to be overmatched for the Illini this season.
Well, they're not good at pass protection.
No.
They seem to be better at running the ball. But two things really bothered me about the game. Mm-hmm. Two things that we haven't mentioned. Number one, they completed 10 consecutive passes in the middle of that game. And somebody said we were in man-to-man defense. Really? There was nobody close to most of those receivers. They were wide open. At the same time, at the end of the game, when we knew Ozigbo was going to run the ball in the line, they did it 11 consecutive times without Illinois being able to. They announced, we're going to send Ozigbo into the line this time because we are running down the clock, and Illinois couldn't stop it.
No,
11 consecutive runs right into the center of the line, and they kept the ball all that time. They could have scored again. They just ran out of, took a knee down there on the 19-yard line. But I that shows extreme weakness when you know what they're going to do and they do it against and the other thing is the pass defense has been terrible at Illinois for years.
It has.
And this was a really low point. Don't look at the number of yards. They quit throwing. You know, when they finally got to the fourth quarter, they had after the pass and the pass to Morgan for the last touchdown, he should have been tackled. That was a short
absolutely.
Pass, and he was running around the right side, and then he straight-armed a guy, and then the next thing you know, he's in the end zone. It was almost like a running play.
It was like a slow-motion running play.
I never dreamed it was going to be a touchdown.
And then he got in the end zone, and Brian's like, Brian Barnett's like, did he just got in the end zone. Did he step out? He had to have stepped out or something. Like, we were just like, really? I just in Lovey mentioned, you just heard in the soundbite to start the show, he was disappointed in a lot of things last night, including the effort for the Illini football team. So again, 28-6, the final wasn't really competitive. Another thing that we want to get into, and we've talked about the quarterback situation, but Lovey made a comment in the media room next door to after he was on with us, and he said that he never felt one of the reasons they didn't make a change at quarterback last night was because he didn't feel like the team was out of it until later in the game.
He was watching a different game than I was.
Yeah, he was watching a completely different game than everyone else. When it was 21-3, I felt like your only chance here is to start passing the football and try to make
the
plays.
It's just like the South Carolina game. There's no difference.
The South Florida game, yeah.
South Florida, yeah.
Yep. Well, give us your thoughts. 356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. You can listen live if you're getting ready to leave your car and being around your house. You can listen live at WDWS.com. Also, email us your thoughts on Illini Football Talk at WDWS.com. Also, just a little while ago, Brad Underwood, in the last 15 minutes or so, spoke to the media. The first time he's been in front of the media this season, practice just started, since the college basketball bribery scandal broke on Tuesday. Of course, one of his former assistants, Lamont Evans, was one of the ones arrested on Tuesday of this week, earlier this week. We'll have some comments from Brad Underwood in the show today. Let's go to the phones here. Our first phone call, Alan in Montrose. Good morning, Alan.
Morning, guys. I was at the game last night for the first half. I left after we got behind 21-3 because I knew what was going to happen. I knew we didn't have the offense to come back. I could not figure out for me why Mike Dudek and Smalling played very few snaps, and I was watching, so I was on that side of the sideline. They was in on a very few plays in the first half, especially Smalling. I think he was only in on about two or three plays. And Dudek, maybe a half a dozen or so. They had new guys out there I'd never seen or never heard of before. And I blame most of what happened last night on coaching decisions. It was ludicrous.
Well, in the first 28 minutes of the game, now I'm right up to the halftime when there was, you know, when it was 21-3 with 1:23 to go. In the first 28 minutes of the game, the only receptions were made by Green, who's, I think, playing. Was he playing for the first time this season?
Yes.
And he had an 18-yard reception, and Thiemann, who had 11, and that's the only two. I mean, they went into the game intent on running. They did not go in with the intention of passing. They only threw one pass. They threw two passes in the first quarter, and they threw two passes in the first quarter, and they threw two passes in the second quarter prior to the last minute, when they had a little time and tried to throw some balls before halftime. But their game plan was not to pass the ball. I mean, it wasn't. And they
I understand that, Lauren, but Mike Dudek is your best football player on the team, and you don't even try to utilize him. At least
do a reverse or something.
Do a reverse or something with him and see what happens. I mean, the play calling was atrocious. Like, we got down there to the 10-yard line a couple times. The Green Bay and Rodgers, you know, okay, who's going to get this for the touchdown? With us, it's always, how are we going to get this in? We was 3rd-and-7, and it looked like an obvious passing situation. And there was 3rd-and-7 goal, which is goal. And on the 3rd down, Crouch is running the ball in the middle of the field. It looked like he was trying to get it in the middle to get an extra better field goal shot at it. I said, what?
Yeah, it did look like that when Corbin ran 1 yard from the 8 to the 7 to set up. They were trying to trick him, obviously. I don't know what to say. I mean, they threw one pass toward Dudek in the first quarter. They only threw two passes.
That was the pass interference.
And Illinois got a 15-yard penalty on that.
And two of them that way.
Yeah, but I'm just bringing up Dudek, and the other one was to Turner, I think. But
yes, it was.
But in any case, I just think that we're complaining about the approach was clearly to get all the blockers they could in there and run the ball, and that's what they did, and they did it successfully the first time, and they did it a little bit successfully the second time, although they ran out of gas at the 35-yard line.
Well, the thing is, because we don't have a quarterback, and I've been harping on this for 2 years. I know you guys say defensive line, offensive line. Yes, we need that, but you build around a quarterback, and we don't have one. Well, I just think Lovie Smith's sitting over his head.
Thanks, Alan. We got to go. I disagree with that last guy. He's not in and over his head. Look at the roster that he took over. And you can have a great quarterback. You can throw Tom Brady under center for the Illini. If you don't have an offensive line that can block for you and that gives you zero time to throw the football, it doesn't matter if it's Tom Brady. It doesn't matter if it's Joe Montana. It just flat out doesn't matter. But I agree, there is a quarterback issue. And there has been, and there's going to be. for the rest of the season.
There's a quarterback issue. There's an offensive line issue. There's a defensive line issue. There's a cornerback issue. There's a safety issue. And, I mean, Illinois is at a deficit too many places. When you play 16 or 18 freshmen, what do you expect?
Yeah, and that's...
I mean, we're gonna rage, you know, get in a rage here about the way things turn out. What did you expect?
I wanted to get into that, too. This was the expectation, for this to be a difficult season. A lot of young players were expected to play. You know, every media member in this town has been saying that for months, that it was going to be a lot of freshmen playing this year. And this is major college football. This isn't, Division I, AA. This is not no slide against them. This is Big Ten football. And when you're playing Big Ten football and you're playing freshman defensive linemen and some offensive linemen who just aren't experienced, like Larry Boyd at this level, he's huge. He's big. He hasn't played against Big Ten competition. So let me you have to be reserved. This, and everyone in town has said this, this is pretty much year one for Lovie Smith. This is his recruiting class, which, by the way, he didn't get a lot of time to recruit his first recruiting class compared to other coaches around the country, and he still had a pretty good recruiting class. This is his first year, basically, because last year wasn't really his team at all, and this is his recruits. We're looking ahead to 2018 and 2019 before we need to start seeing something. 2019 more so in my mind. Listen, we got to take a timeout. We'll come back. We got some Brad Underwood comments to play for you. Scott Beatty, who was at the scene. Lauren Tate was there as well, waiting, and Brad didn't come down before he had to come back over to the show. A couple players spoke. Practice officially gets underway this morning for the Illini basketball team. But again, Brad Underwood made his first comments today since the college basketball bribery scandal came out earlier this week. We're going to hear from Brad coming up. And also this morning, Jerry Colangelo and Manny Jackson addressed the team before their first practice today. So not every day that you get Manny Jackson and Jerry Colangelo, if you're a college basketball player, speaking to you at the same time. So pretty unique opportunity over at Oven. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Again, 356-9397. Also, text us 351-5357. Mike Pearson coming up. His new book, it's fantastic. I've gone through it this week. Illini Legends, List, and Lore. If you don't have a copy and you love the history of Illinois athletics, you have to get a copy of that book. Then Jeff Greer on the Louisville situation and the impact of the college basketball scandal coming up at 9:50. 10:15, Will Leach, and then 10:45, we will have Jerry Colangelo on with us. Plenty of other headlines around the country as well. We'll try to get some of those in as well. We'll be back here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. 56 degrees at 9:22. Thanks for joining us today. You can give us a call, 356-9397, or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Well, Scott Beatty was over at the Oven facility this morning. Just sent a sound from Brad Underwood on the reaction to the college bribery scandal. He didn't say a lot, but we got a couple minutes here from Brad Underwood to hear what he had to say in reaction to what's been going on this week across the college basketball landscape, which, of course, led to the firing of Rick Pitino. Other assistant coaches are in trouble. Of course, Lamont Evans has been fired from Oklahoma State. Because he was one of the four assistant coaches arrested. So let's hear from Brad Underwood now, just in the last half hour or so.
Well, I issued a statement earlier in the week about that, and there's nothing more I'm going to say at this time about that. And we're here to start practice and move on, and it's I think my statement said enough.
In the bigger picture, maybe you can speak to this. What are your thoughts on maybe how this will change college basketball, the reality of it, maybe, and also just perception-wise?
Well, I think your guess is probably as good as mine. I think some things that happened, and surprised people, but I don't know. I think there's. Some things come to light that maybe surprised everybody.
There's some coaches who have said this is kind of a good day for college basketball. They'll rein in some of this stuff. Do you feel that way, or do you?
I think we've got the greatest sport in college basketball. I think we're part of one of the greatest events in all of sporting events in the NCAA tournament. I think that there's problems or perceived problems in a lot of different sports or whatever we are. But I still think we've got the greatest sport going, and maybe there's a speed bump along the way and some changes need to occur, but this is one of those moments. But basketball is as strong, and these athletes out here are showing up not just at our university but every university, and they're working their tail off to have a great season, and I think that's what the focus in this gym is on, and we'll see where the rest of it goes.
What are they primarily assistant coaches that were named? Do you feel like head coaches have to do something different? Do you initiate a different approach?
No, I'm not gonna comment on get into what everybody else as a head coach does, but there'll be a time to maybe talk about those things. Today is about these guys.
Brad Underwood, moments ago, the last 20 to 30 minutes or so, I was due to speak at 8:30 this morning. That did not happen. Lauren Tate was over there and had to come back before Brad was able to come down and speak to the media. Lauren, as expected, didn't say a lot there, but it's an FBI investigation right now, and he's currently not been connected. His former assistant is Lamont Evans, who has been fired by Oklahoma State. He's made his court appearance, but because it's an FBI investigation, he isn't going to say a lot.
Well, yeah. And
in case he's implicated in any way down the road, he wants to be careful, I'm sure.
Well, yeah. I don't know if that's his thought process, but
yeah, that's true.
I think that the concern that you have is that the four assistant coaches who got in trouble, very likely, since they were wiretapped, undoubtedly talked many, many times, dozens and dozens and dozens of times to their head coaches, because the assistant coaches are often on the road recruiting. And so you've got all that wiretap stuff. So who knows how that's going to turn out by the time Arizona and Southern Cal and the rest of them have analyzed, all those things have been analyzed. Some head coaches could be fired if any head coaches were implicated.
Well, Dan Dockich of ESPN mentioned Brad Underwood specifically on ESPN 1000 the other day about Brad Underwood should be fired. And I heard the interview on Thursday, and I hear the interview with the same station on Wednesday. Where's Sean Miller, Dan? If you say Brad Underwood should be fired, why are you not saying Sean Miller should be fired? Because he's been with his assistant longer,
yeah,
and his assistant was one of the four assistants arrested. And I know the Chicago guys specifically asked about Brad, but I think Dan needed to mention, because you're right, this could end up being, I've seen multiple college basketball guys who cover the sport
this
nationally.
This is going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean there's going to be some head coaches gone.
Yeah, and he said national college basketball guys said this is going to be going on all season, where things are just going to happen, where coaches are just going to be there one day and gone the next. 1 minute.
Well,
You've
got to find, just saying that somebody cheated is one thing, but having them taped on phone calls and acknowledging it is a whole other thing. Let's get around to Mike Pearson. I'd like to hear what Mike Pearson's got to say about this.
Yeah, we're going to let's take a timeout. We'll bring Mike in. He's in studio with us. Of course, he wrote the book, Illini Legends, List, and Lore. We'll bring Mike in, get his thoughts on the recruiting scandal. Of course, the former sports information director at the University of Illinois. So he would probably glad he doesn't have that job right now. We'll get Mike's thoughts on that and his book and more coming up next here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. 57 degrees at 9:31. Pleased to be joined by former University of Illinois Sports Information Director Mike Pearson. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Illini Legends. He's got his third edition of the Illini Legends List and Lore book out. I spent time, I was just telling these guys in the break, my jury due this week. Of course, wasn't on a jury, but I was spending time in the jury assembly room going through the book this week. It's like 500 pages. Mike, good morning. This is a pretty incredible book.
Well, I appreciate it. There's been a lot of work that's gone into that over the years, and certainly this past 18 months as we updated it for a third time. But we've tried to be as give it as much variety as we could with as much as many sports, as many names, as many pictures. And so I think folks are going to enjoy it.
How much time did you spend, like, on a daily basis on this thing?
40 years.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, as I was going through it, and just the number of different things that you have to gather and people you have to talk to and get those photos that you mentioned, I'm like, how do you put all this together? And it's just a really, really incredible.
Well, let me say this, it was a lot easier in 2016 and 17 than it was in 1990 to 95. When you had to sit in front of a microfilm machine or you know, go to the library and pull out a dusty box of clippings. Now you can put in three or four words and about 40 articles pop up. So it's just a different animal today in terms of research.
20 years of living the job, you know where the bodies were, didn't you? I mean, you figured it out as you went along, I'm sure.
There are so many good people in college athletics, and then there's a handful of people that maybe you'd rather not have met. But I had just an incredible time during my career. I decided that, you know, my life, as you know, in that profession, your life is all consumed by your job. You know, you live it 24 hours a day, and you get phone calls at night. And, you know, so-and-so's been picked up on drunk driving, or so-and-so's been is academically ineligible. Or so, you know, there are times when you'd rather not be in the profession. And in 1996, when I left to go to sports publishing to become their acquisitions director, I just decided that my family needed me more than my profession.
Well, Mike, before we get into the book, because you're the sports information director here, you would know how to handle these type of situations with this week with the college bribery scandal. Just what was your reaction to that and your thoughts on that situation? Because you were inside the sport for several years.
You were in the middle of the Deion Thomas thing.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. Well, Brad Underwood said a lot of words during that soundbite that you had. I didn't hear much substance there.
No.
Because he can't. He can't talk about it. And he doesn't want to implicate himself, certainly, whether he's guilty or he's not. But this is you know, as Lauren and I were talking, this is such an incredibly delicate time for this to pop up as recruits are giving their commitments. Everybody's being coached at this point as to what they can say. Whether Coach Underwood has his own personal attorney or not, I don't know. But certainly he and Josh Whitman have spoken and said, you have to be as vague about this as possible, because we're just seeing the very tip of the iceberg right now.
Well, let's get back to the book. So I got a foreword by Josh Whitman and just some good comments from him. And one of the things that, I was first few pages of the book from 1895-96, you have a list, which is part of the name, records by decade for the Illini football team. And obviously, we're in the middle of football season.
Well, let me explain something. This is not a book where you read.
Yes.
This is not a book that has chapters that you know, this is a year-by-year history of the University of Illinois with a lot of links in each year. I mean, how many you talk about things that are not sports-related in some cases. I mean, who was the president at the time? I mean, this thing is absolutely no Illini fan should go without this book.
Well, my line is, this isn't War and Peace. You don't have to read the first paragraph to understand where the plot's going.
You can pick up any page.
As I told Jim Turpin, you can flip it open at night to any page, read for 10, 15 minutes, and put it down, and then flip open to another page and learn some more. So I tried to put everything into the perspective of that particular season. What was going on in American history during the time that these events were happening? And that helps people remember, I forgot that was the case.
What do you think is the first thing I did? I went back to when I was in school.
Sure,
absolutely.
Sure.
I mean, everybody will do that. Oh, let's see what happened. What happened in those years, you know? And then there they are.
Yeah.
It's terrific.
I was drawn, of course, the Final Four team, 2005, for the Illini. That's the Final Four team I remember. In 1989, it was, you know, just turned 6 years old, like 3 or 4 months prior to the Final Four that year. So I didn't really get to watch any of that. I've seen highlights of it, of course. I'm very aware of how that season went. And it's that, of course, I went to that. But then I wanted to, the Illini record, football record by decade, off to a great start all the way through 1929. But since, by decade, only two winning decades since the start of 1930 for the Illini football team. That's just a really astounding. You have the records in here and the ties and everything.
That tells some tales, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It's just been the last 80 years have been very inconsistent. You've had three bad years and then a good year, mm-hmm. and then maybe two or three bad years and then another good year. But, you know, 13 Big Ten championships, you look back, they haven't come all that lately. I told someone else about, you know, winning the first game of the Big Ten season is so important historically. In 121 previous Big Ten season openers, Illinois had won the first Big Ten season opener only 49 times. That's 40%. That and a 0-1 start doesn't get you off to a very good start.
No.
Consistency has not been a hallmark, certainly for Illinois football, maybe more so for basketball.
Well, if you go back historically and look at the last 2 years of the last 10 coaches, they didn't leave the next coach with much. They all got fired except Makovec.
Right.
Now, Ray Elliott retired, but under heavy pressure.
Bob Zupke retired under heavy pressure.
Right. They tried to fire him several times and finally got it done. I mean, you can say he retired, but he was forced out
right. Because
he got old. But what my point is that recruiting died in the last 2 years of all these different coaches. Even Makovec's recruiting was dying, which means that the new coach that inherits that has got a real problem because his first 2 years aren't going to be very good either. We have enormous losing records in the last 2 years of every coach and the first 2 years of the new coach.
Right.
For the last 10 coaches.
Right.
I've got the record. I don't have it in front of me. But it's astounding. And so once you have two consecutive losing seasons to start, it's really hard to recover. That's the problem that Lovey's got right now. Because when you lose, you then don't get into the top recruits.
Right.
It's just a fact of life.
And as you know, Chicago doesn't belong to Illinois. Everybody comes into Chicago, and you've got to get your share in your state.
Mike Pearson, former University of Illinois Sports Information Director, joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Illini Legends. Of course, his third edition of Illini Legends list and lore is now out. He's going to be signing autographs today. You have a speaking engagement over at State Farm Center coming up at 10:30 this morning. Been signing autographs all weekend. And again, if you haven't seen this book, if you haven't had it, you really need it. It's a big book, but man, there is plenty of information in here. And it's not just sports. There's stuff, major significant things that happened in those particular years, whether it be with the university or whether with just America as a whole. So definitely take a look at this book. One thing that we'll probably never see again, one of the stats I found in here, was that the Illinois 1910 unbeaten, unscored upon season of 1910. Only duplicated 19 times in the history of college football. That will never happen again.
No, Artie Hall was a lawyer and later became a judge in Danville, Illinois. And he was the head coach of what they called the perfect team. You know, as you say, unbeaten, unscored upon. But what I tried to tell about in this book is some of the details about Artie Hall, the person, a lot more than the coach, because he became a very successful judge and later developed in the state of Illinois the hard road system, because it was all gravel roads in those days. And he was the guy who really masterminded that.
I was driving in Monticello just 2 days ago, went over to see my sister, and as we're going out, I was asked, what's this road? I said, this is the hard road. That's what it's called.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
My stepfather helped to build it. And I'm just telling you that it doesn't have any other name.
It's, no, yeah.
Where are you going? I'm going to take the hard road.
Yeah. So I tried to tell some stories about the individuals. well beyond their coaching or athletic exploits.
Well, Mike, what in this book, whether it be men's or women's athletics, because obviously there's both sides here. There's just obviously the women's athletics got started much later than the men's. But what about this book is your favorite part of this book? Do you have a moment in Illinois athletics history that you really enjoy flipping to in this book?
Well, my wife always says I was born about three decades too late because, you know, my favorite era of sport is the golden age in the 20s and 30s.
Really?
You know, talk about the great athletes that were there. Not only Red Grange, Babe Ruth, mm-hmm. Bobby Jones, mm-hmm. Jack Dempsey, on and on, Lou Gehrig, on and on. So I enjoyed the 20s when, you know, sport was pretty innocent in those days, and it certainly became a big thing. That's when sports sections really took off is the 1920s, mm-hmm. because sure. you had so many American heroes.
You know, I'd like to have today, if Illinois didn't play last night, I'd like to have a doubleheader for Illinois football today because I was not aware that ever happened.
Yeah, a doubleheader, and I think that was a Bob Zupke team. They played two games. I think they may have played a JV team in the first game and then the varsity team in the second one, but that doesn't happen very often.
Well, and Cub fans are happy these days. Their teams are really good. But from 1952 to 1978, when they had 14 different managers, Illinois had one baseball coach.
Right.
That's just – think about that. That's just definitely coach, 26 years is a long time for one coach.
Yeah, Illinois baseball has had great longevity mm-hmm. in terms
great
of coaching.
Great teams all the way back to Rutger and Lundgren. And,
that's
yeah.
right. And then
Huff.
Yeah, and Huff before that. Huff won 11 Big Ten championships by himself, and then followed, as you say, by Carl Lundgren, Wally Rutger, Lee Eilbrock, of course, was here for years and years. And then Itch Jones was here for a long time. Of course, Dan now. So Illinois baseball has won as many championships among Big Ten teams as any team has in any sport.
Repeat that.
Yeah. Illinois baseball has won as many Big Ten championships in its sport as any school has in any of their particular
sports.
That's
interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. One thing that Illini fans probably don't think about a lot these days is Illini women's basketball in terms of success. But there was a lot of success, and there were a lot of fans going to games back in the 90s. So when Teresa Grintz was here, and Ashley Berger and those guys, and Allison Curtin for her stint here before she transferred. That seems like so long ago, but you really chronicle that in here along with some Illinois volleyball, some highlights from there with Don Harden and those guys.
That was a huge era, especially the early years of the Teresa Grintz era. Of course, she was a highly successful coach and one of the greatest women's college basketball players of all time with that Immaculata team. But she had it going. I was a season – when I left Sports Information, I became a season ticket holder for women's basketball. That's how exciting it was for me. And I enjoyed those games over at Huff Gym.
I want to ask you, I'm going to switch around a little bit. Michigan State, which you're very closely connected. I've got two questions. Number one, your thoughts about Izzo, who has certainly become one of the four or five top basketball coaches in this country, I think. And then the other thing is, can the football program bounce back under D'Antonio?
Okay. Let's start with my best man. He was my best man at my wedding back in 1989, introduced my wife and I. He's, of course, a Youper, as they say in Michigan, and my wife is a Youper, so he got us introduced and stood up at our wedding. You know, I never envisioned him being the great coach that he is, but the one thing he does is recruit. He is a phenomenal recruiter.
Let's be honest. There were circumstances that got him started when Michigan got in trouble, and he really jumped in.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, he became the dominant force in that state,
yes.
Whereas Michigan had, for the most part, I mean, I remember somebody there, Kelser, and who was that other guy?
Magic. What was his name? Irvin something or other.
Yeah. I think that he inherited a situation that wasn't – that took off in part because of what Michigan was unable to do.
That's exactly right. If you look at the Michigan-Michigan State history, both teams aren't up at the same time most of the time.
That's a good point.
But I remember a night when a young kid named Chris Weber committed as an eighth grader to the Michigan State Spartans. Well, we understand history kind of turned. There might have been some money involved in that particular
Ed
case.
Martin?
We don't know that for sure, but we can surmise. Your other question was about Michigan State football.
They had more injuries last year than anybody can even imagine.
They did. And this was coming off three consecutive 11 or 12 or 13 victories. That's never happened in Michigan State history. Even with the great Biggie Munn and Duffy Doherty
Webster
teams.
And that gang.
Oh, gosh. I mean, so D'Antonio has made Michigan State football. They'll be back. They had an off year with the injuries and a losing record, but they'll be back.
I wonder if you're right, because Penn State is rolling so strong, and you got Michigan back strong again, and you got Ohio State. It's going to be hard for them in that division.
I am glad that Illinois is in the Western Division.
So are we. But
well, Mike, how can people get your book?
Against
Illini Legends List and Lore, the third edition, everything from the beginning of athletics at the University of Illinois all the way through, 2016 and part of 2017. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, okay. We included all the Hall of Fame class in here, women's athletic history. Even the disabled athletes have a section in the book. But we are going to be signing tonight at the Barnes & Noble store here out at Marketplace Mall.
What time?
That's at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
And then at 10:30, just in a few minutes, I'm going to be giving a speech about Illini athletic history, and I have prepared a video narrated by George Huff, of all people.
Narrated?
I took a little liberty on this. Follow me on Twitter at Illini Legends. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I put out about 25 different historical posts about Illini history. And then my website is sportsll.com, sportslegendslistandlore.com. And if people want a personalized copy of the book, they can go to my website, and I'll sign the book however they want me to.
Well, Mike, we could spend probably the entire show and maybe half this day on this book, because, again, there's so much stuff in it. This is not me trying to sell the books for Mike. I enjoyed it. I don't read a lot of books myself, to be honest. I can't tell the last book I actually read from cover to cover. This is really good stuff. Again, it's not a reading book. There is reading in it, but it's not like reading chapters. This is a fantastic book for Illini fans, and if there's something, you'll learn something new every time you open it.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
We'll take a break. Come back. Jeff Greer down from the Louisville Courier-Journal on what's going on with the Cardinals this week down in Kentucky. Well, that's coming up next here on DWS.
While the investigation is continuing and no charges have been filed against the University of Louisville or any of its employees, the allegations are serious. It is vital for this university to strictly adhere to NCAA rules and, of course, federal law. Doing nothing would be a tacit endorsement of unethical and criminal behavior. I would say that I was more angry than embarrassed. Obviously, embarrassment is part of it as well. But I think people who have watched what the University of Louisville has been busy doing in calendar year 2017 will understand that we have been working day and night, committed to make sure this place is a wonderful place for our students and our faculty and staff, and we're making a tremendous amount of progress. And when something like this happens, it makes me angry that we have more work to do to get where it's not going to prevent us from getting where we want to get, but it's another stumbling block, and yes, I was angry about it.
It's been a dark week at U of L. There's no other thing to say about that. It's been very trying for a lot of people, for the university, the city, this program, the athletics department. It's been a tough week, but we're getting through it. We're putting our head down, going back to work, and we look forward to moving forward and getting on with basketball season and continuing to have some great success in the athletics department. I can assure that for myself. I can't get into too much detail about the investigation. It's a federal investigation. It's ongoing. So I don't think Dr. Postal would have had the confidence to put me up in this position if he was worried about anything.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for joining us today. 59 degrees at 9:55. That is Louisville interim president Greg Postal and now interim men's basketball coach David Padgett. That sound courtesy of the Louisville Courier-Journal. Of the Louisville Courier-Journal, now joining us, Jeff Greer. Give him a follow on Twitter at @JeffGreer_CJ. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Not too bad. Well, my first question is, how was the wedding last night that you were at? It seemed like you were having a good time.
Yeah, the wedding was great. It was poorly timed.
How dare them have a wedding this week?
I know. I should have asked them to cancel it. All of the bride's parents and family members who all live in Louisville were all stunned that I was even able to make it. But yeah, it's been a busy week.
Well, it's the scandal, bribery scandal, has really rocked college basketball just across the country. It's hit multiple programs. Of course, Illinois head coach Brad Underwood has a former assistant in Lamont Evans now, has not been tied to Brad yet. There's been nothing indicating Brad did anything wrong. So Illini fans are watching this closely. But, of course, this has really hit home for Louisville. With a firing of, well, he's on a unpaid leave right now, but he's effectively fired, as his attorney stated. David Padgett's the interim coach. There's still no AD. Are things starting to settle down a little bit now that some decisions are being made?
Well, it's kind of like starting to be able to sip ginger ale when you have an upset stomach, mm-hmm. You know? I mean, it's maybe settling down, but you just don't know when things are going to rumble up again. I mean, Louisville has just been, I've been here for 4 years, and it is just a nonstop scandal machine at this university, and not just athletics. So they're desperately trying to dig out you mentioned the interim president there talking before, Greg Postal. He's basically been tasked with an entirely new board of trustees to help Louisville climb out of a disastrous run where the president basically had the rubber stamp of the former board of trustees and was funneling money to himself and some of his cronies. They got a really rough internal audit that exposed all of that, including the athletics director was part of that. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the escort scandal, which I think we've talked about before.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, this summer. Yep.
And then this. So there's just this endless supply, but I do think they feel like they're making some moves to get out of this current stretch.
Well, Jeff, this is Lauren Tate. I'm most interested in just how much they have actually pinned directly on Patino. I know he has $46 million or so remaining on his contract. Has it been proven in any way in your mind that he facilitated the $100,000 payment to Bowen?
Okay, so you have to read the FBI complaint very closely.
Yeah, I do.
I forgot what section it's in. I think it's like page 20 or 21. But when you read it closely, the way that it is phrased, one, you know, first of all, if they have recordings of the Adidas executives conversations with Rick Pitino, they didn't reference them in the complaint, but they did have three phone calls the week that Brian Bowen committed to Louisville.
But they don't actually have Pitino wiretap. They just know that they talk to each other, right?
Correct. Yeah, they have record of the phone calls. That he had three phone calls with this guy, Jim Gatto from Adidas. They know that Coach One, who is one of Louisville's assistant coaches, basically facilitated that phone call with the goal of nudging the Adidas guy to, pick up the payments a little bit. And we have a source at the Justice Department who confirmed to us that Coach Two is Rick Pitino. So, and I know that other outlets have reported that too. So, all of those things point to Rick Pitino may not have quite known what he was doing, but I would be shocked if he didn't, based on all of that evidence. I mean, it's not.
It's still circumstantial, though, isn't it?
Yes, it's circumstantial at this point, but it, in the scope of all of this, it just doesn't look good. It's a bad look for him.
Oh, yeah. I think there's every reason to have fired him by the university. I'm just trying to find out. He's gonna sue for his $46 million. I mean, his attorney's going to represent him in that regard. And I assume that if they can't absolutely prove that he was involved, that he could probably get his money. Am I wrong?
Well, I think that's a great point, and I think that's that's the main reason why he's on administrative leave for the next, I think it's like six more days now. The Board of Trustees at U of L will vote this week coming up, presumably, to fire him for cause, and then it could go into the court system. Now, Rick certainly already has plenty of money, but you know, $40 plus million is a lot of money on the table, but I think he may have a hard time arguing it, because you know, all of the other things that have gone on during his tenure, I think it's going to be awfully tough for them to win that case.
Well, that the extortion case, which stemmed from an affair at a restaurant, that kind of started things. Am I correct, or was there something before that?
No, that was the first one, and then basically since then, there have been a lot of smaller things that have happened with Louisville, with the players or you know, an assistant coach or something. But that all kind of seems so silly now that we were pursuing it so hard when this stuff was going on with the escorts and paying of recruits. But the one thing I will mention is the contractual language, and it's probably the same. I mean, it's probably the same at every school, probably the same for Lovie Smith and all of these different coaches that you guys are following up there too, is that the way they word it is, if there is anything that brings bad publicity to the university, you know, that they can terminate a person for cause. And so, I mean, how do we define that? Well, I would say, you know, an FBI investigation, including your university and basketball program, is bad publicity. So just off that, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but it just seems like that's a tough hill to climb for them to try to win that kind of case.
Why haven't we been apprised of who the assistant coach is or coaches that were involved?
They're still working through... Well, let me back up. I think the university knows which coach is which. There's two assistant coaches mentioned in the FBI complaint, but only one of them is actually given a Coach 1 or Coach 2 title, and the other one is, quote-unquote, another assistant coach. So that would be Jordan Fair and Kenny Johnson. I don't know. The one thing that I think people are still debating about, and that's why we haven't reported, is because I've had I've talked to probably 20 different people, and I would say 10 say it's Kenny Johnson as Coach 1 and 10 say it's Jordan Fair as Coach 1. So I think, you know, someone's going to have to find out through an FBI or U.S. attorney source if they'll leak that kind of information who those guys are, but they are not currently working at U of L. I believe that they are just kind of being held out of work. They're not officially on leave or anything. They're just not coming to work.
What's going to happen to Brian Bowen?
Great question. I mean, I think we're seeing with, you know, Terrence Ferguson at Arizona, there have been a couple other instances. I wouldn't be surprised if Mitchell Robinson, the kid from Western Kentucky, who's been back and forth, I wouldn't be surprised if we would see them, you know, Brian go in the same route as those guys, where kind of just sits out. He's hoping to make the NBA. Obviously, his reputation is tarnished by all of this. You know, I think it would behoove him professionally and long-term to go find a place to play. The flip side is, you know, are NBA teams going to want to be attached to someone who's been linked to something like this? But there's no doubting, as is usually the case when it's a highly rated recruit, is the kid is a really good basketball player. I mean, he is very, very good. He can play three positions. I mean, he can be a half-court style point guard if need be. I mean, he's 6'7", 6'8", and is a good scorer. He can handle the ball. He's a good passer. So, I mean, there's a future for him, but as of right now, I mean, I think he's just kind of trying to stay out of the spotlight and figure out what to do.
Jeff Greer joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS, the Louisville basketball writer for the Courier-Journal. If you want to follow the Louisville situation and find out what's going on down there, definitely follow the him on Twitter, follow the Courier-Journal. He's on Twitter at JeffGreer_CJ. I've been watching you guys all week and just trying to find out what's going on because Rick Pitino is one of the most famous coaches in college basketball history, so it's very intriguing to keep an eye on this. Should Louisville administration just completely cleaned house here? I know David Padgett hasn't been there very long. He was in March of 2016 was director of basketball operations, and now he's the head coach. Should they have just completely cleaned house just to get rid of anybody connected to Pitino to just kind of move on? I know they may do that when they hire a full-time coach, in the spring, but should they have done that now?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument to be made for that. There's two parts of this that put Greg Postal, the interim president, in a really tough spot. Obviously, he had to fire or push in that direction. He had to fire Pitino. And the athletics director, Tom Jurich, deserves as much, criticism or whatever word you want to use as Pitino. I mean, he's watched over just a ridiculous amount of wrongdoing, and he's stood by a lot of people who don't deserve to be stood by. Louisville fans will fight you tooth and nail on that argument. But anyway, so one is the practice schedule. Preseason practice is slated to start 6 weeks before your first game. And for Louisville, that is on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So, you don't want to leave, a batch of 20-year-olds rudderless. I don't know if they could have gotten, a Tom Green or Thad Mata or somebody who's out there who is not coaching right now. But, I think you can make the argument that maybe that would have been a better idea. But the flip side to that is, and this is my second point, is the players at Louisville wrote a letter basically imploring Postal to hire Padgett. They didn't end up having to send the letter to him or give the letter to him because Postal had already decided on Padgett. But, when you're facing a situation like this, and I realize – players are young and they might not have the same approach to it as people like you and me, but they wanted Padgett as sort of like he's been their big brother figure. He hasn't been implicated in anything. I know he's on Pitino's staff, but at least he hasn't been implicated in any of the stuff with the escort scandal or this. I think U of L felt like short term they're okay going with him. And understanding that, he's part of that staff, but he's managed to keep out of trouble. The flip side, of course, is he that oblivious to all of this, or is there more to it? And I think that's something that could blow up in their face at a later date or just not end up being an issue at all. We'll see.
Well, Jeff, we could probably there's so many different facets to this. I watched the 23-minute video you did with your colleague Gentry Estes the other day, and just like I can't turn away from it. But so there's so many more facets of this we can get into, and I was surprised Pitino to getting fired the last time we talked, which was in June. I was expecting to be fired then.
He's the only head coach to be fired so far.
That's true,
which is very interesting because a lot of others are on the spot and. We'll see where it goes from here. I mean, about Miller and Arizona, that seems to be pretty serious there. But he's still the head coach, as far as I know.
Yeah, he is. Well, Jeff, enjoy the rest of your weekend. I'm glad you were able to make the wedding last night. I too was surprised you were able to get since the news conference was at 5 yesterday. I'm surprised you were able to get out of there and get done what you had to get done as Padgett's introductory news conference and get to the wedding. So I'm glad you're able to do that. Enjoy the weekend if you have one.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me up.
Not a problem. We'll keep following you.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye. That is Jeff Greer of the Louisville Courier-Journal joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Jeff on Twitter at JeffGreer_CJ. We will take a timeout. I got some phone calls and text messages to get to. Jim from Rockford, I know you're waiting for us. We will get you on here in just a few minutes. I appreciate your patience here this morning. I just want to mention a couple other notes. We mentioned that David Padgett's the interim coach at Louisville. Bruce Pearl didn't say much yesterday over at Auburn. He said the behavior as a top assistant is unacceptable, but he stands by the school's initial statement saying he can't and won't have any further comment. And the South Carolina AD, Ray Tanner, says the program is not a target of the federal fraud and bribery scandal that led to the arrest of former assistant Lamont Evans. He was with Frank Martin in 2008 as a student assistant. However, South Carolina is still going to do its own review. And if you missed Brad Underwood's comments earlier in the show, we'll replay those for you when we get a moment as well. He made his first comments into the media. He said a statement out a couple nights ago. Didn't say much. We'll play those for you when you get a chance later in the show. We'll take a timeout. Come back. Will Leach is in studio. Mattoon native, University of Illinois alum, writes for Sports on Earth, does a lot of different things. He's in town. He was at the game last night. We'll get his thoughts on Illini football. The St. Louis Cardinals, unfortunately. We'll talk to Will coming up next here on DWS.
I think they were just winning a lot of their one-on-one battles. We had a lot of opportunities to have big plays and things like that, and just one or two guys on the play kind of had a breakdown. And I think that when that happens, you need all 11 players on offense playing good at the same time. So I think that was why some of the plays didn't break as many big plays. I mean, realistically, it is a setback, whether it feels like it or not, but as an offense, we're going to come out each possession and keep pushing and keep going and just wait for it to crack and for us to get in. But realistically, it is a setback. I was definitely confident that I was going to be the guy in the game. I've never been told anything about a quarterback controversy or anything like that. I've been told that I'm the guy, and I don't think that any of that was said or has been said or anything like that.
Right formation, Wilbon. Fake hand off to him. Lee rolling right, dumps it to the tight end. Caught into the end zone. Touchdown, Nebraska. Tyler Hoppus, 6 yards. Fake left, roll right. Caught it, headed upfield. Crawford tried to catch him, did, but it was too late. In the end zone, and Nebraska's lead is 20-3 with a minute 23 left in the half. Wilbon to the left of Tanner Lee. Time to throw. Dumps over the middle. Caught. Morgan with a catch. 15, 10, 5 at the pylon. Did he score? He did. Touchdown, Nebraska, 23 yards. Out of celebrating in the East Stands. Taking a knee is Tanner Lee, and that will do it for this one. Nebraska is going to win it 28-6.
What they did tonight is played their brand of ball, you know, didn't really let us get anything going running game-wise and passing game-wise. We're just not set up to you know, we're not a passing team. We get in passing situations is hard for us. I mean, kind of simple as that. And that's protection, accuracy, throwing the football, and, of course, catching it. They did an outstanding job, but we have to play better. Simple as that. You know, the thing was for us to play a lot harder than we played last time and be more physical. Just kind of disappointed in our effort.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. That was the not-so-good highlights from the Illini football game last night. Nebraska won 28-6. Lovie Smith at the end there. You can tell his disappointment. Let's go to the phones real quick. Will Leach will be in. He's in studio with us right now. We'll get his thoughts in just a moment. Jim, thanks so much for hanging on all this time. We appreciate it. How are you this morning?
Hey, how are you guys?
Not too bad.
Good. Hey, before I get to my football comments, right before break, you talked a little bit about, you know, some of the college basketball programs. And I'm just curious, once Auburn fires Bruce Pearl, do you know if they'll be setting up a GoFundMe page to help him with living expenses?
I hope not. Yeah. There's not an Illini fan that's sad about this at all. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll bring such a tear to all of us.
He's got a career in wiretapping if he needs
to. Well, at least he'll be able to ride his boat with all the co-eds again. So anyway, hey, so back to the game last night, and sure. I was ecstatic with the Lovie hire, and I'm trying to remain optimistic about the whole thing. But I got to tell you, you go 2 weeks of planning against a team that got shell-shocked against NIU, a quarterback who threw 8 interceptions in 3 games. We're young. If there's, I guess, experienced talent, it's on the offensive side of the ball with running backs and wide receivers for us. But I can't figure out for the life of me what Garrett and Dee is trying to do. And what was staggering to me, and again, you know, if you're a fan of both the Illini and the Bears, you just can't help but think back to when Lovie was coach of the Bears and how the offense was such an afterthought. And then when I see that last night and I hear the commentary that we're not a throwing team, we're not a passing team, and then we kept Chase Crouch in the game late because we thought we were still in it, I mean, it's just beyond insulting. And you can't help but think back to how it was with the Bear when you had this phenomenal defense, but it was almost as if Lovie thought, well, we don't hear about offense, we'll just score on defense. And that doesn't work. And again, I know it's one game, it's a small sample size, but man, and I know Jeff George isn't the savior. I mean, if he was, he'd be out there. But to have someone out there who can at least stretch a defense, and I know he's immobile, but someone who can at least throw over the top. And we know what we have with Crouch. I guess the hope is obviously in future years with some of these kids coming in next season. But man, that performance after 2 weeks is just disappointing. And I'm telling you, I know there's this debate out there, guys. You talk about the message boards. Well, I sad to say, those are the real fans. Those are the ones that follow this stuff like crazy.
Yeah.
And the message boards are incensed with the performance of the offense last night.
As they should be. There were moments where it was okay. That one drive, 15 plays, 9 minutes. That's a fantastic drive, and they got it done there. One play that stood out to me, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lauren, was a 4th-and-1, and they were at the 40-something yard line of Nebraska. You got to go for that. It's 4th-and-1. You're in Nebraska's territory. I realize if you don't get it, you give them great field position. But Lovie does. That's what Lovie does. He's conservative. That's what fans of Bears. He didn't have very many losing seasons in Chicago. I mean, he went 10-6 in his last season. He got fired. Bears fans are clamoring for 10-6 right now, obviously. But he got criticized for his conservatism, and that's what he does here. And that's got him a lot of wins. But it's also he's also lost some jobs because of it as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Jimmy, any other thoughts? We got to run.
No, that's it. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks. Have a good weekend, sir.
You too.
Thanks. That's Jim from Rockford joining us in the studio. Will Leach. Give him a follow on Twitter. William F. Leach, Mattoon native, Deadspin founder, writes for Sports on Earth, does a lot of different things. Good to have you back in town. Will, how you been?
Good. I enjoyed the front of the sports section of the News Gazette. They said I was a Mattoon celebrity. I don't think those two words have ever been put together before.
Well, they should be. You're pretty well known. You do a lot of different things. But you were at the Atlanta game last night. Let's get your thoughts. You heard Lovie Smith's comments there. What did you think, and what concerns you have? Again, they're playing so many freshmen and Big Ten level defensive linemen, offensive linemen. If you're freshman or young, you're going to struggle.
Yeah, and you know my general thought on this is, I know this is Lovie's second year, but it's his first year. I think that really gets forgotten. This is his first year, really, as coach. He came in so late last year, was unable to put a lot together. You know, not only is he playing a lot of freshmen, but listen, teams that aren't playing a lot of freshmen struggle when they're not getting good quarterback play. And there's two separate things I think to remember. Like, you're going to have to deal with a lot of these freshmen. You're going to have to deal with having a plan in place. You're going to have to deal with some of the mistakes they make. But in addition to that, and that's one thing. That's hard enough to deal with. But then when you have just no – such struggling quarterback play, you're going to have nights like last night where nothing goes right.
Right.
And I agree a little bit with the idea. I didn't quite understand the offensive game plan entirely last night. But frankly, I feel like my general idea with Lovie and kind of what's going on here is – listen, we've had quarterbacks here that had 5 different offensive coordinators in 5 years. We've had to me, the problem with Illinois football has not been that they haven't had talent. It's not been that they haven't had good coaches. It's been they haven't had any consistency.
Yes.
They haven't had anyone like, look, let's just give it. To me, that's the best part about the Lovie deal. Here's 5 years. Like, figure it out. However long it is. You got a substantial amount of time to get this figured out. And for me, I'm okay with nights like that. It's frustrating. They did not play well. The offense definitely did not look good. I would have liked to see George in there late too. But I mean, let's not lose the forest for the trees here. Like, Jeff George Jr. is also not going to bring this team into this incredible run at the quarterback position either. There's still a long way to go. For me, I am comfortable with letting them figure this out as the year goes along. Neither Chase Crouch or Jeff George Jr. is a team that's going to lead this as a quarterback is going to lead this team to a lot of wins. So for me, it's more about getting experience for those young guys, finding out who you've got, stacking good recruiting classes on top of one another, and letting this thing actually like crockpot a little bit and let it warm up a little bit and become something. I know individual losses can be frustrating.
Yes.
Certainly, it was not that much fun to watch last night, but I think you've got to have. I know people don't like to have patience in this day and age.
No.
But I do certainly think that you're going to have games like this. But to me, you know, there's still the thing that was frustrating about last night was it was the first step back this year. I thought they made that big step forward after Ball State. And listen, South Florida is a really good team, mm-hmm. and they're facing a really good quarterback. So then that was an ugly game across the board that kind of got away from them. Last night was the first time they were like, okay, this is the team we thought this team was going to be this year, like not that good and really kind of struggling early. But I still feel like there's enough steps moving forward, there's enough exciting guys, and there's enough of a plan in place. It was an ugly loss, but I'll take that as long as we keep seeing improvements as the year goes along.
You know, I keep hearing people say I don't understand the game plan. I understand the game plan. When you run 18 times out of the first 20 times, your game plan is to run.
Run.
I mean, that's pretty simple to me. Now, what's taking place on a football field is about six or seven really physical battles between individuals, mostly linemen. Defensively, the linebackers get involved. Unfortunately for Illinois, the defensive backs made all the tackles.
Yeah,
I'm not near – I think the offense was really bad, but – I'm way more worried about the defense because I think any team that can move the ball against Illinois and just throw a pass anytime they want to a wide open receiver, you can't win. You can't possibly win. They quit passing late in the game and just simply ran the ball in the line because they were winning all those battles up front.
Yeah.
I don't know how do we find a solution to this when you're playing 18 and 19 year olds against 21 and 22 year olds?
You wait until those 18 and 19 year olds are 20 and 22 year olds. Is exactly what you do. And to me, that, and I understand people don't want to be.
But in the meantime,
it's going to be rough.
Yeah.
And and it's to me another key last night was I didn't really need to pass late, but like Nebraska was a rattled team coming into this game, and that quarterback mm-hmm. in particular was rattled coming in, and Illinois did nothing to rattle him last night. He couldn't
get to him.
Yeah, like he got kind of his groove back a little bit last night because he didn't have any time.
Yes.
Didn't have to worry about anything.
1,000 passers his age could have done exactly what he did.
Yeah.
Because he had the time and the receivers were wide open. 1,000 guys.
Yeah.
We could take somebody out of the stands that played high school football, and you could complete passes in that situation.
I want to take you out of the stands. And see
I'm not ready.
I couldn't do it. I would cry the minute someone started running after me. But
I'd run to the other end zone. I said that to the show before.
So I think that's the thing is these things are going to happen. They're going to happen. For me, you look for the positive things. You look for things that you can build on. But this was never – I mean, there are people – thinking Illinois was going to win one game, some people coming into this year. So
yes.
already, I think you just want to keep seeing improvement, and you've got to have patience. I know fans don't want to hear that, but like you have to have patience when you've got – like he came in with very little to work with and right at the beginning of the year. We're seeing what he wants to do. Now, listen, people are going to be complaining about Lovie Smith being conservative if they win 8 games in 3 years. Like there's going to be a certain kind of fan. I get it. You like to see some aggression too. But what Illinois needs is someone right now that's going to be conservative and build this stuff up. And maybe in 5 years we can all go get Mike Leach and everyone can go nuts. But for now, I think they need that. Oh, that was a great win last night.
Yeah, beat USC.
The trick to building it up is getting players, and the difficult part is getting players when you're losing. Now, they use that whole idea to get a pretty good freshman class, the idea that there's playing time. But I think that it'd be better off. I mean, you know, the best thing could happen to us, I thought, was the South Florida game just be called off because I didn't want to go down there. I didn't want to see that because I knew what was going to happen. And I felt like the same thing yesterday. And now I don't know if we'll win any more games. We could beat Rutgers maybe. I don't think we can beat Indiana. I shouldn't say can. I don't think we will.
Yes.
I'm ready for no more games on national television.
Well,
on Friday night.
I'm afraid.
Everybody's watching. It's on Friday night. Everybody's watching.
Here's what I want to know. I want to know Will Leach's thoughts on the basketball thing. That's what I really want to hear. That to me is that's just consumed me for the last 3 days.
Yeah, it is. I mean, certainly, I think there's two ways to look at this. One, I've heard a lot of people talk about, like, is this going to touch Illinois? Like, it's going to touch Illinois, and it's going to touch Georgia, and it's going to touch UCLA, it's going to touch literally every school in college basketball, because this has just been common practice. I think this has been common practice. I'm not saying it's common practice in Illinois or specific schools, but it's just, this has been, people that cover college basketball have, there has been an understanding that, maybe not specifically each of these incidents, but understanding the power that the shoe companies have.
If there were five guys, if there were five teams going after Brian Bowen, and the winner got him for $100,000, how much were the others offering?
Of course, I mean, of course. And but for me, you know, and what I find fascinating about this, the thing that really blows me away about it, is you look at these assistant coaches. These aren't criminals. These aren't like bad people. These are people that, like, at a certain level, that I don't think they even really thought they were doing anything that wrong. And certainly nothing that was going to be a felony,
yeah,
for crying out loud.
With the FBI knocking on your door.
So, because I think that, like, this has become, I mean, and I, you know, frankly, I know this is going to sound a little silly. It would not surprise me that a lot of these head coaches actually don't know the details of a lot of these things.
Oh, no, I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
If I'm going into some, what I would call criminal activity, which I think Evans was, yeah, at both South Carolina and Oklahoma State. I don't think I want my head coach to know.
Oh, I think there's no question. There's no upside for it.
I don't. Yeah, and why would somebody making over $1 million as head coach, or maybe $7 million? I don't even know if Pitino knew. Now I'll be arrested for saying that.
Well, one way or the other,
he might have kind of know, but I don't think they probably kept him out of the loop if they could.
I certainly think if I'm Pitino, though, after all I've been through the last few years, keep me in the loop on everything now.
Yes.
Because you only get to use that excuse once, or I guess in his case, twice. Because I think that's the thing. Pitino, it was just like, okay, enough. Like, you're embarrassed enough. Like, that's OJ getting arrested later. Like, you need to be on the straight and narrow forever after you got away with something like that. So, and I think, you know, so for me, I will say this though. Obviously, the argument of whether to pay players or whether not to pay players is an ongoing thing. I would say with the amount of money that's in college basketball and the amount of money that these schools get and these shoe companies get and the networks get and the NCAA is getting, with all that money, if you don't give any of that money to the players, their money's going to get to them somehow.
Yes.
There's going to be a black market I remember I was at the Final Four at Jerry World in Arlington, Texas, the year the Connecticut won.
Okay.
And like, that place has diamond encrusted cup holders. I mean, that is just the richest place you'll ever see. And there's people in different zip codes watching the game in the stadium. Like, it is just a massive 80,000 people in there. And everyone's paid $200 to get in, and everyone's the corporate champions of Coca-Cola. And all of this stuff, and then you got Shabazz Napier playing in that game, saying just interviewed that week, saying, you know, we actually ran out of food this week.
Yes, I remember that.
And so for me, that hypocrisy is so large there. Now, we can argue about the details of how, I understand it would be difficult to figure out the semantics and the particulars of paying players. But if I'm a player and I'm looking at that, and I'm like, wow, like this, the guy that's the MVP of the game, oh, Shabazz Muhammad, I think it was, sorry, not Shabazz Napier, Shabazz Muhammad. The player in the game, the player, the MVP afterwards says, yeah, I literally didn't have money to eat last week, and I'm playing in this diamond encrusted, massive 80,000 seat stadium. If I'm a player, I'm like, you know what? If you want me to come to school, you need to pay me. And well, if you're not going to do it above board, I'll find another way.
How did you pay the basketball players and not the other 500 people?
Oh, I mean, again, that's what I mean.
The other 500 athletes, half of which are women, who are going to demand equal rights.
I absolutely understand that. And I understand. But I'm saying that, like, until that problem is fixed, players are going to find a way to get money, and someone's going to find a way to give it to them.
And it isn't just player; it's families.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The money.
Yeah, particularly when
in all these situations, the money doesn't go directly to the player; it goes through the families almost always.
And for what it's worth, most of these families are
not. They need it.
They're not buying private jets with this money.
And it's their one chance in some cases to really hit the few thousand dollars that they
just otherwise, or just to get out from under it a little bit. And so I really do, like, it's hard for me to drop a ton of outrage about this is probably the best way to put it, because it the way the sport is structured, and I love college basketball as much as I love anything in this world, but the way the sport is structured, there's just an inherent kind of corruption in the way it works that you're right. It's hard to figure out a way to pay the players. It's really difficult to do it. So, but if you can't do it above board, people are going to finally do it below board.
Will Leach joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Give Will a follow on Twitter, William F. Leach. That's L-E-I-T-C-H. He's the founder of Deadspin. A lot of people heard of that website. Senior writer for Sports on Earth. Does a lot of different things. So, Will, before we get to, I've got a couple of phone calls here. I wanted to, you know, bring up the thought. Bruce Pearl has been around investigations. And all the, some of these coaches have. We just mentioned Rick Pitino. He's been around these investigations with the NCAA. Is it just an ego for these things? Like, we're just going to keep doing this because I'm going to keep getting to coach, and I might lose a job here, but I'll get another job somewhere else. And it's just, it's amazing to me that guys like Bruce Pearl and Rick Pitino continue to either have staff that he's not paying attention to, or they're just doing it themselves, and put themselves in this position to continue to get in trouble. Because Bruce Pearl is in trouble, right? It's Chuck Person, but he's in trouble.
Well, the culture allows it. Kelvin Sampson and Bruce Pearl were hired immediately after and made millions of dollars. I say immediately. I mean, it wasn't immediate, but they're back making millions the same way as they were before.
If I'm Bruce Pearl, the society has not given me a lot of evidence that I should change my ways. It's probably the best way to put it.
Good point.
And you know, if you, and thank God I'm not Bruce Pearl, by the way, that would be a very miserable experience. But I'll say,
I'd punch you. Right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
you wouldn't be in the building.
Yes, I would.
Be people with pitchforks out front.
If I were in Bruce Pearl, I would be sitting next to the absolute wrong person to be sitting next to as Bruce Pearl. But I would say that.
Unfortunately, I met him once.
Yeah. I would say that this is fan-driven too. Why does Bruce Pearl keep getting jobs? Because he breaks rules that allows him to win games. Mm-hmm. Why does that value? Because fans deep down just want you to win. We can convince ourselves that, our guys are on the up and up. Our guys are on the up. Now, that's other people. That's over there and somewhere else. We just want to win. You know, this where it's funny. I live in Athens, Georgia, and Mark Fox is the coach of Georgia, mm-hmm. and he is very similar to Bruce Weber in the idea, like he's always said, like, I'm going to lose out in some recruits. There's just some guys I'm not going to get because I will not play some of these games that they play. And you know what? He is under fire all the time. Why aren't you recruiting better? Why haven't you made the tournament a couple of years? We're going to have to get out and get somebody that, like, you want a clean program, but you actually want to win a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why is because to me, Mark Fox is as good of a guy as you will ever meet and as above board as anyone you can find in this business. And all it's done is caused him grief.
Let's go to the phones here. Jim in the Quad Cities. Jim, good morning. What do you got for us today?
Hey, I want to change directions and talk football. And I'm just curious. I know Lauren, I think, grew up in Monticello. He probably should have played quarterback for the Sages last night, and I think Will is from Mattoon. I want to get back to the Friday night football issue, and I know, of course, Illinois is beholden to the Big Ten TV contract, but talking about the base, you know, last night, you saw on the social media during the day, you know, basically the Illinois accounts talking about what type of atmosphere it was going to be. There was nobody there last night. Terrible crowd. So the impact in the long run is they get drilled. Nobody's going to come to the games the rest of the year. So the radio network affiliates, how many of the radio network affiliates preempted their game for high school football last night? And that's what I'm just saying. They're always at the short end of the stick. And last night was a typical case in point of those Friday night games are stupid. Because what do you think the attendance would be today if Illinois played that Nebraska game on a day like today compared to the dumb Friday night schedule last night? I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Jim. There'd be a lot more Nebraska fans there. There were a lot last night, and there'd be a lot more if it was on a Saturday afternoon, I can assure you of that.
Yeah, but of course, you know, this reminds me of all the general things going in sports across the board. The money is not in the attendance. The money is in the mm-hmm. television. And as long as Fox Sports 1 is willing to pay to do that game on a Friday night, they're going to put that game on a Friday
night. A lot more people watched Illinois last night than would watch them on Saturday.
Yeah, for
a
for,
lot more.
Unfortunately.
On TV because,
but with the way
because
that game went, yeah.
If you were playing an 11 o'clock game, there's another half dozen or more games dead against you.
Yeah, one of the things that's, that happens, particularly this happens, the NFL is particularly bad about this because at least the experience of going to a college game, you get the tradition of going there. And I'm at my alma mater. I get to be among a lot of fans. NFL games are, you're basically on a sound stage. Like you are, as a fan, you are an extra. As opposed to a fan, like you, the number amount of time you sit around during the NFL game waiting for television to come back, you are there just to provide atmosphere for the television program.
They're going
to
put mannequins in there one of these days.
Oh yeah, they're going to be watching robots. There's not going to be any organic life at all in the stadium.
Let's go back to the phones. Alan Fisher, good morning. How are you, Al?
Yeah, hi guys. I'm follow up on. Guy called earlier about Dudek not being on the field, and I was screaming down at McGee. I said, but how come Dudek's not in the game? And especially on the goal line there, we threw two corner routes, which are highly tough plays to make. Dudek's not even in the game, and he's your best playmaker on offense. And until we start getting aggressive on defense and getting up, playing man-to-man and being physical to line screaming, it doesn't matter if you got Craig Swope back there. If he's going to sit back in that silly zone, let these guys complete passes like no one's out there, it's not going to change. So the scheme is a big part of that. Now, let me give you a hypothetical, Lauren. Well, how about if Mike Leach was coaching this team and Jeff George and he had five wide receivers out, would he move the ball? I would go out on a very small limb and say he would probably move the football. I was in his bandwagon a few years ago, and I'm just not sold on his coaching staff and the coordinators. I just don't think get it. And I think it's proven to be correct so far. So, I mean, we can play the freshman card. That's fine. But until you change the schemes, we're going to get the same stuff, guys. And at the end of the first quarter, here's the situation. We're kicking a field goal, and I said, let the clock run out, go down the other end. If there had been another 5 seconds left, we'd have kicked the field goal into the wind. We'd have to kick off into the wind instead of walking down and you know, just let the quarter run out. And then we have Kendrick Foster 5 yards deep in the end zone against the wind, not once, but twice, and both times the ball hits the ground.
Mm-hmm. Now, well, he just dropped it. Reached the
first
ball.
Time he never got to it. First time he never got to it, Lauren.
No. The ball.
Yeah, he did.
Well, we disagree.
Okay. But still, why are you running up when you're kicking in the wind? That's my point. I mean, coaches, where's the coaches that say, hey, get up, you're kicking in the wind, and just stuff like that just drives me batty. I mean, this is Division I football. Come on, let's get real. I mean, $21 million. I don't know, Lauren.
If you're losing all those battles up front, all we're talking about is you know, it doesn't matter. None of the rest of this matters if you can't win any of the battles up front. It's like having bad pitching. You can have 8 players out on the team, and you complain about the player. But I'm complaining about the Cardinals and. They played a team from Memphis, but when the pitching was there, they won. When the pitching wasn't there, they didn't. It's all about – in football, it's all about up front.
I know. Do you think Mike White had great offensive lines early? He didn't. I mean, they flooded the field, and he picked teams apart.
And he went 3-8.
You don't have to be a great – yeah, well, then what happened? But you don't have to be a great offensive line to pass block. And just watch Washington State. And watch Luke fall.
By the way, that was interesting. Did you see that, Will?
What, the Washington State last
night? Yeah, beat Southern Cal.
Yeah, that is like the pinnacle Mike Leach moment. Like, that is.
You bet.
Yeah, I think that's an impressive, impressive.
But he's been leading up to that.
Yeah. Yeah, and for 20 years, 30 years. I mean, this, you know, I there was a book that came out recently about Hal Mumme and about how Mike Leach was kind of a protege of Hal Mumme and how he's been this kind of experimental mad genius for a long time. And yeah. I agree, it's hard to find a different coach than Lovie, more different coach than Lovie Smith than
and he
than
doesn't
Mike
seem
Leach
as possible. Weird now as he used
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I know, right? Like it used
maybe
to,
he's maturing.
Yeah, or maybe we're meeting him. Maybe we're getting crazier.
Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it. Washington State right now 5-0 on the season after defeating number 5 USC last night. Washington State ranked 16th in the country. Well, we'll run in short on time here. We probably can keep you for another couple hours. There's just so much stuff we want to get to, as always, with you. But I wanted to ask you about the Cardinals. The season is is effectively over, two games left. A lot of changes are coming. One of which is really just, I'm a little irritated about Lance Lynn. It looks like he might be brought back, and he's your most consistent starter from start of the season until now. The one I trust the most, which I wouldn't have said just a couple of years ago. He looks like he's gone, and it looks, I mean, there's so many outfielders. We talked about this during commercial break. What are they going to do this offseason? What do they need to do?
Yeah, well, I think one of the main things, the Cardinals are kind of based in this idea. Remember when they, one of the reasons their roster got so the way that it is because they were trying to save up money to get to keep Pujols. Remember that whole, that was the whole bring in Jeff Lunau and like modernize the whole system. Is the whole thing is based on having a superstar, a bunch of average to above average players surrounding a central superstar. So you can afford the superstar and then also by having regular salaries for those other guys. The problem is the Cardinals roster actually has that now. They have a whole bunch of, like, if you look at all those outfielders, I think all six, seven, eight, all outfielders, I think they're all actually not bad. Just none of them are great.
Yes.
And there's no superstar around which to surround them. And look at, like, you know, I mean, look at the Cubs. Cubs have two or three at this point. And I think that what they're going to have to do this offseason try to figure out is they need to package some of those guys for a star. I think it's one question. You need a scary bat in that lineup, whether it's Donaldson. I know there's even Manny Machado has been on some of those minds. I know everyone's very excited about Stanton, but like, and I think obviously
I've said that, but Miami's got to pay some of that contract.
But that contract is like you know how Cardinal fans are always like, "Whew, we didn't sign that Pujols contract." Mm-hmm. You're signing that Pujols contract if you trade for Stanton. It is unless Miami takes a huge amount of that money. I mean, remember after August, he was put on waivers, and anyone could have claimed his salary, and nobody did it. That's a pretty good sign that contract is absolutely crazy. So yeah, he is a fit. He's certainly a fit for trying to do, but that contract is just so over the top. So I think you're going to see you got to make some. I think some of those corner infields. I think you're looking at maybe Jerko being on the market. I think you're looking at Piscotty or Grichuk on the market. I think even conceivably, it's funny you talk about Lynn. I think Lynn's going to get a massive contract, and I think he deserves it. I think he deserves it.
Yes, he does.
And I'm not sure, as much as I love Lance Lynn, I'm not sure the Cardinals should be the team that gives that to him.
You got to think they got Reyes and Weaver coming.
Yeah, and Weaver looked terrific there. Reyes, you know, there's still some question marks about
Tommy
Reyes.
Tommy John, though.
But you've got, to me, one of the kind of the disappointments this year, I thought Carlos Martinez was going to become the unquestioned ace potential Cy Young contender this year, and that hasn't happened. And there were games late during that pennant chase where you needed him to really step up. He had that one shutout against the Reds, but other than that, you needed him to step up, and they didn't really happen. You know, but I think, frankly, I hate to keep going down this road, but I think there are issues in the dugout with that team. I don't think there's any question. I think that the first couple years of Mike Matheny, you saw a lot of the strategic missteps, but he was learning. That was the idea. The players respected him. He was learning. But I think you're still seeing those same mistakes. And even worse, you're seeing those same mistakes plus that old LaRussian stubbornness. LaRussa would have his guys, and he would stick with his guys no matter what. And it was very frustrating about LaRussa, but LaRussa did so many other things well, and also frustrating because LaRussa was a quixotic guy. But I think that Matheny has the stubbornness, but not, I would argue, the intellect of a LaRussa. And I think it's setting the team back. Listen, Bill DeWitt, the owner, said, he's our guy. He's our guy. I'll put it this way. In 2012 and 2013, I was kind of lonely. I was kind of on an island saying, I don't think this guy is the right guy for this team. I got a lot more company these days worrying about Matheny as the manager of this team.
Well, hey, Dan, on a down note, we got to get out of here and write Jerry Colangelo. You're being kicked out for Jerry Colangelo.
Yeah. I can take that.
You wrote a nice letter last week. You're from Mattoon. Some really tough news about a week and a half ago. Thankfully, no one died and everybody's okay. But a pretty scary situation with the shooting in the cafeteria at Mattoon High School. You know some of the players involved in terms of the administration.
Yeah. I was back in Mattoon this week. I actually spoke to the Letterman's Club back when Mattoon was in the Big 12 and beating up Champaign Central and Centennial, our 93 high school baseball team that I was on. They honored our team because we won the Big 12 that year, and I gave a speech. And that had been planned for months, but I obviously did not know it was going to be right on the heels of this. And it is. You know, I talked to a lot of people there. I talked to Larry Lilly, who's the superintendent of the schools in Mattoon, obviously right in the middle of everything that's going on. And he was my baseball coach.
Yes.
And you know, so you Everyone's still pretty shaken. But I have to say, it has been encouraging to me. The victim's father, no one's given any interviews, including that teacher, which as a journalist, I feel like I want to encourage
him to get her.
But that's, I do really respect it. I think there's a lot of respect for her. She was just doing her job, the teacher that stopped him. But it was funny, the victim's father talked to Larry Lilly and said, I want everyone to know three things. One, that my kid's okay. Two, that he's a little annoyed that he's not, he wants to make sure that's going to get him out of that test. And three, the father said, and to me, this was a really great moment for me. The father said, I just want the shooter's family to know that we're praying for him. And for me, you know, it's been hard times in Mattoon. It's been some hard times in Mattoon. And, you know, it's a polarizing time in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so to see that kind of empathy, I think that everyone's kind of taken the teacher and that father's example, and I think it's brought out the best in people, even though people are still pretty shaken.
Can you give us 10 seconds on kneeling for the anthem?
Yes, we need your – yeah.
I think that I think people have the right to protest however they feel.
Well, Will, and I know it was a tough time for you, and you know, if something happened in my high school, which is Pena High School, I would immediately be frightened because I know so many people in that town, and I'm sure you were frightened. And again, it's glad everybody's going to be okay and move on. Obviously, getting shot is something that's going to scar that kid for life. Obviously, just mentally, not so much physically, but. I'm glad everyone's okay, and I shouldn't say enjoyed. Enjoyed's the wrong word, but I thought you really had a good column that you wrote on your site.
So. Yeah, it's a you can go to tinyletter.com/William F. Leach, and you can see I have a weekly newsletter, and I felt like I wanted to kind of express that a little bit.
Well, this guy has all kinds of thoughts on a wide variety of topics. Every once in a while, writes that you know about the Cubs when he's disappointed that they're beating his Cardinals. So yeah. It's good stuff. Give him a follow on Twitter, William F. Leach. Will, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it as always. And anytime you're in town, please let us know. We want to have you in studio.
It's my pleasure. I'm just sorry. I want to make sure I get to keep reading Lauren. You're going to keep yes. I've heard this scary news.
Once a week.
But every time I look, he's still writing something.
All right. Well, Will, thanks so much. And we'll do it again down the road. Coming up next, we're kicking Will out for Jerry Colangelo here on DWS.
To Wade on a penetration. Kicks it back out to Bryant. Bryant puts up the three. It's good. Kobe Bryant from downtown.
Is there anybody in the NBA who loves these moments more than Kobe Bryant? He's been called upon to play defense. This could be a gigantic four-point play.
Zone. Paul to Bryant. Bryant looking for an opening. Gets in. The runner rolls in. Kobe Bryant knocks it down. It's an eight-point game.
Well, you see why Kobe Bryant's on this team. Money under pressure. Kobe Bryant took over the game for the United States when the game was cut to two. That's why he's the MVP of the NBA and could be walking out of here with a gold medal to add to his three NBA championships.
Kobe Bryant, the NBA MVP, carries the Lakers to the NBA Finals and will win an Olympic gold medal. He's also become the most popular non-Chinese athlete here in China as his version of the Gatorade dunk on the head coach.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Those highlights courtesy of NBC. The reason we played those highlights, the man credited with turning USA basketball around, former Illini Jerry Colangelo, is in town for the Hall of Fame induction ceremony this afternoon. Jerry, I'm sure that was a great moment for you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. In fact, it brought back some memories. You know, that was back in 2008, and it seems like maybe last week or last month, but Kobe was sensational. We had a real struggle with Spain in the final, and you know, the good news is we won. We accomplished our goal and objective to bring USA basketball back to the pinnacle, and that took place in China in 2008 in the Olympics. And since that time, of course, we've won two additional gold Olympic medals in London and 12 and then Rio last summer. And there's one more, you know, in the hopper, and that's getting ready for Tokyo in 2020.
Is that going to be your last Olympics in charge of USA basketball, or?
That's my swan song.
Okay.
2020, I kind of set it. As a matter of fact, I was thinking of actually stepping down last summer after we won, you know, our third gold, and Coach K was stepping down. But I had already announced that Popovich was going to be the new coach, and he put a condition on it. He said, "Jerry, I'll do it, but I need you to stay with me." So I agreed to do it one more time, and so we'll be together through 2020.
Well, Jerry, that's you get to this weekend, and just I know there was a gala in June in Chicago, but the official induction ceremony is today. Just what does it mean to you for this day to be here and to be a member of the inaugural class of the Fighting Illini Illinois Athletics Hall of Fame here?
Well, first of all, it's an incredible honor to be listed with the illustrious names that are included in this inaugural class, and it's certainly great to be back in Champaign. It always brings back fond memories of my my time here as a student and as an athlete. And last night's game didn't have the desired result, but it was a great event. The introduction at halftime, but the camaraderie and the visitation with fellow Hall of Famers up in the suite was really special. Had a chance to see the Illini basketball team this morning in their first practice, and that was great to see. There's nothing like the bouncing of balls and the squeaking of sneakers to get my blood flowing anyway.
Well, naturally, I'm going to bring a subject that probably we would rather avoid, but Jerry, talk about your reaction to what we've seen in the last 3 or 4 days in college basketball.
Well, obviously, Lauren, I'm you know, disappointed that the type of activity that's being discussed, and it appears is, you know, fairly factual, that is taking place in college basketball. And hopefully this is something that can be uncovered and taken care of so that damage is held to a minimum. You know, it's a great game. There are terrific people who are involved in this game, but there are those who have personal motivations and agendas, you know, as it relates to talent and directing talent. And then you have the shoe and apparel companies that are involved with people. And so I would say this, it deserves to be really looked at under a microscope. And one thing I'm certain of is that college basketball will survive. It's so big. It's so huge. It's just a matter of tweaking the system that needs to be tweaked and cleaning up whatever needs to be cleaned up.
Where are you on the idea of paying college basketball players more than the stipend that they're already receiving?
No, I've always been for the stipend, Lauren. You know, I wrote a book back in 98 called How You Play the Game, and it was how the convergence takes place regarding big business, money, politics, and the world of sports, both collegiate and professional. And one chapter was directed to what I saw existing back then and that I was familiar with, and it called for the NCAA to make a number of changes. And by the way, some of those changes have been now implemented over the last few years, and I'm happy to see that. So in that chapter, I talked about a stipend, you know, for the athletes. Back in my day, it was $15 a month for laundry money. Think about that. And so, you know, you need to put some money in the pockets of the athletes and legitimize what's been done under the table. And so I was always for a stipend, but nothing more.
And the stipends right now are running, I think the players on full scholarship getting something under $3,000 a year. I think that number, and I should look it up. But they are receiving that amount. What do you think it – and, of course, whatever you give the basketball players, you're going to have to give all the other sports. What do you think – is that enough?
Well, see, here's an issue, and I understand we have rules that we all have to live with, but the sports that make the money are football and basketball. I think everyone knows that. on a collegiate level, and those programs pay for everything else. You know, unfortunately or fortunately, not all things are equal. And so though I've always been a firm believer in the world of, business, that the people who are the producers are the ones who should make the most money, whatever that means. And so, you know, I have difficulty seeing that every athlete has to get the same thing when, in fact, they're not producing any revenue. So that's something for the NCAA to figure out. But for certain, the amount of money paid any of these athletes should not be more than pocket money, money for, you know, a burger and a malt and take care of their personal needs. But should not be conducted as a business. It's just to assist them in their time on the college campus.
Well, I just wonder where we go from here, because whatever you might want to do, and you, your point is really good about the fact that the ones that produce deserve more money, but whatever you have to do must be approved by the government, and the government won't approve of anything unless you are equal with the women. And you know, now we're talking about 500 athletes on campus, you know, that that's a lot of money. I mean, I know they're getting a lot of money, but you know, what's the biggest trouble? That's a whole other story, by the way. We can get into that. A lot of that money is being forwarded into the future to pay for facilities, which, you know, didn't used to be the case. But now with 40 million or more coming in from TV money, you can see what's happening. It's being, well, we're already talking about building a new football facility. I'm sure you're aware of that. And some of that money is going to be coming from the TV, because they're not going to be able to raise that much money.
Lauren, I think this. I think the reality is, and we're talking college sports here, we're not talking professional sports, but it's big business. When you look at the super conferences, they have enormous budgets. They have enormous needs in terms of facilities, either upgrades or new facilities, and it seems like every 20, 25 years, you're back in the cycle of new facilities lately. So that's kind of daunting when you think about that. But there's also the athletes who make it all work. They're the ones who pay for those facilities when you get right down to it. So they're profit centers in their own work. They get an education, they get a stipend. They create revenue that keeps the system going. And, you know, I don't have the final solution, but I would say that it's an evolving solution that needs to be continually addressed. And I'm not sure it's ever going to be over with, because as soon as you think you have it pretty much in place, something else will take place that'll, you know, upset the apple cart. So it's challenging, but it's worth the challenge. And as long as you have smart people, honest people involved in the system, then I think it'll all work out.
Jerry, do you believe in requiring a year of college before the players can turn pro?
Yeah, I do, Lauren. I'm an old-timer. Well, I'd like to see them in school for a couple of years. That's me personally. You know, you have agents who take a particular position. You have the college coaches who take a particular position. And then you have professional basketball who have an opinion. You know who wins out? The union, usually, in these, because it's collectively bargained. But on a personal note, I like the old days when they stayed in school for 4 years.
Yeah, I'll say.
And then, of course, that was challenged in the Spencer Haywood case many years ago. And we went through a whole series of different types of programs to get players eligible for the draft. And now we're stuck with what we have. I don't think it's good for college basketball. I don't like the system of only 1 year. What happens in the future remains to be seen. But personally, I'd vote for them staying in school at least 2 years.
Jerry Colangelo, just a few more minutes with us before we let him go. He's in town for the Illinois Athletics Hall of Fame induction ceremony this afternoon over at State Farm Center. It's free for fans. The event gets underway at 2. Manny Jackson also here, Dick Butkus, Dee Brown, Perdita Felician, and among the other people who are going to be here. Jerry, I want to stick with the money just for a minute. Go over to the NBA. Yesterday, Russell Westbrook is now has the richest contract in NBA history. In your time in the NBA, did you see contracts reaching to what they are now?
No, no. When I broke into the NBA, it was 1966 with the birth of the Chicago Bulls. And it was a mom-and-pop league back then. Our entire payroll that first year in Chicago was $180,000.
Wow.
Think about that.
That's not even league minimum now.
Ticket prices were $2, $3, $4, $5. National TV was $100,000 a team. Coaches made $12,000, $15,000. But I've been part of this whole system, and I'm not overwhelmed by the numbers because it's just continued to evolve because of the great interest in the game internationally and what television and cable has brought to the table. And, the NBA is at an all-time high. Trust me, in terms of financial strength and wherewithal. And the deal is the players get 50% of the money. And so that's why you're seeing the numbers that are being paid out to the top stars in the NBA. And I don't see any end to that. What? So it's kind of an interesting thing for me to have been around as many years and see where we were when I started and where it is today.
Well, Jerry, before we let you go, I want to ask you, I know it's been 16 years now, but you were instrumental in getting a baseball team out in Arizona, and I'm sure 2001 is still a great memory for you as well, and defeating the Yankees.
Sure.
It was a sensitive time that year, and I think America was kind of pulling for the Yankees, but to win that, but still, that's a great moment, and a moment I haven't forgotten just how the game ended with the bases loaded and a hit over Derek Jeter's head.
Yeah, it was terrific. It was surreal when it took place, and it's a great memory for me. And growing up a Cubs fan in Chicago as a young boy, and never having really won, on my first trip to Wrigley Field after giving birth to the D-backs, we won our first game against the Cubs in Wrigley Field, and in just 4 years we did win the fastest in the history of baseball to win a World Series. And who against? The most famous team in the history of baseball, the New York Yankees. So, on my list, on my bucket list, if you want to call it that, that I've achieved, that has to rank right up there with four or five other things, including the gold medals in the Olympics and the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame and a lot of other things, but it was a great memory.
Well, Jerry, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much. I know you've had a busy morning already with basketball practice. You and Manny spoke to the team, and thanks for being gracious with your time today here with Lauren and I.
All right, guys.
Nice, Jerry, have a good a good one this afternoon. Enjoy that.
Thanks, Lauren. Bye-bye.
Bye. That is former Illini Jerry Colangelo. He's owned the Arizona Diamondbacks, the Phoenix Coyotes. It was now the Arizona Coyotes, and so much. He's the director of USA Basketball, kind of the turnaround. They've won 3 gold medals since he took over in 2005. We're sticking around. As you might notice, we're running a little late today, which is we're going to go a little long. We got several text messages to get to. In case you just joined us and you missed Brad Underwood's comments from this morning, he didn't say a lot. But we're going to play them for you again and let you hear what he had to say. Again, wasn't much. But just in case you miss it, and we've been telling you he was going to speak this morning to the media for the first time outside of the statement he gave the other day, we're going to play that again coming up here on DWS. And again, get to some of your text messages. If you have any final thoughts, send those texts in or give us a call here on DWS.
I think that there's problems or perceived problems in a lot of different sports or whatever we are. But I still think we've got the greatest sport going, and maybe there's a speed bump along the way and some changes need to occur, but this is one of those moments. But basketball is strong, and these athletes out here are showing up not just at our university, but every university, and they're working their tail off to have a great season. And I think that's what the focus in this gym is on. You know, we'll see where the rest of it goes.
What are they primarily assistant coaches that were named? Do you feel like head coaches have to do something different? Do you initiate a different approach?
No, I'm not gonna comment on get into what everybody else as a head coach does, but you know, there'll be a time to maybe talk about those things. Today is about these guys.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Don't do a double take on your clock. It is after 11 o'clock. We're still here trying to finish some things up. I want to get some text messages you guys sent in. We've not been able to read any of those today. That was Brad Underwood, in case you missed it earlier in the show. That's first comments to the media in person this morning on the college basketball scandal. Didn't really say anything there, Lauren, as expected. I'm not surprised he didn't say anything, but I want to make sure people got to hear it who were not listening at the beginning of the
sure.
show today.
Well, he did what he had to do.
Yeah, he did. Well, that's one of the clips from Brad Underwood we're going to play here today is on Mark Smith. Scott Beatty, thank you for getting the sound for us this morning. He went to the media availability with Brad right before the show it started. And, well, Lauren, you went there. It started at 8:30, and you didn't hear from Brad.
Yeah, they had Finke, and they had one of the other players on, I had to leave.
You had to come to the
before,
show.
Just as Brad was coming on, it was about 10 till 9, and I had to get back here.
Well, here's Brad Underwood on Mark Smith and his thoughts on what Mark's been doing since he's been on campus and the transformation he's had for the Illini basketball team.
I got to be really careful when I talk about Mark. I've said this, and I'll say this. I've said this privately, and I'll say it publicly. In my 30 years as a college basketball coach, from the day that young man arrived on campus to this day right now, I've never seen a young man improve more than he has. And we all know that he was Mr. Basketball in the state. He's got big shoulders. I think he can handle that. And he wants that pressure. He wants that expectation, so to speak, put on him. And I'm not a big expectation guy. I think concentrating on one sport, I think having the opportunity to be in the gym every single day, I think finding out that he can't eat French fries, I think finding out what the weight room is, he never really truly lifted like he's lifted now. You look at his body, he's in incredible shape. It's opened up his hips more, he's just made so many improvements. Now he's got to learn the game and learn it at the college level. And I think once that he's got a great grasp of that,
that's exciting. Does he seem more like a one or a two right now? You don't do ones and twos.
He really seems like a really good player that can play either. And, you know, I think his ability, he's got to grow. He's got to learn to play in ball screens more, understanding that it's not a 6'4 high school center that's hedging or helping, that it's going to be a 6'9 or 6'10 potential athlete shot blocker, that he's got to learn to make those reads, learn where, you know, how teams scout him. That'll be drastically different than what he's seen at the high school level. That's the mental part, and he spends a ton of time in film. He lives and dies basketball, and his commitment level has been really what's impressed me the most.
Brad Underwood on Mark Smith. Thanks again to Scott Beatty for getting that sound. Thanks to Evan Kahn, our producer, for getting that uploaded, and we got that work together and got it saved. So that's Brad Underwood this morning. His first comments on the scandal to the media, at least in front of the media. Had a statement the other night, was pretty brief. Also some comments there on Mark Smith. Some breaking news in the college football world this morning. Former Purdue Boilermaker coach Joe Tiller has passed away. The news is coming across in the last few minutes. You know, sad news. But, Lauren, you've known about Joe Tiller for a long time, and just Illinois. I don't know how many times Illinois played Purdue when he was the coach there, but a successful coach.
Yeah, he was an offensive guy that got people excited over at Purdue, and really they've been trying to find another Tiller ever since he left, and they may have it in Brom.
They just might. They're exciting. They lost to Michigan last week, but they've been exciting to watch so far. This is a Joe Tiller's speech at Ross-Ade Stadium following his final game in 2008. He said, "They say when you leave a place, it's not what you take with you, but rather what you leave behind. Hopefully we left some great memories. I know we've left some great young men." And clearly, you know, Purdue fans, as you just mentioned, they left some memories there indeed. Well, let's read some text messages, and Laura and I are going to get out of here for the weekend. Thanks for sticking with us a little bit longer today. The 9217 area code on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, the NCAA is making a ton of money off these athletes. Let's have them pay them, and we just had that conversation. We'll see where that goes. I think there's
government regulation that prevents it. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that the Congress can't make another decision, but right now Title IX requires that you treat everybody the same.
Well,
and now you're talking again. I mentioned the number. I mean, maybe I'm off a little bit, but it's about 500 athletes, and there's a lot more athletes at Ohio State and some other places that have 30 some sports. So now you're really getting into money. And they are getting a stipend. They do get, I mean, I think that I hate to throw out numbers that when I haven't double-checked them, but I think Penn State, for instance, has the biggest stipend in the conference based on the university established numbers. And I think that each player gets $4,000. Now, that's not all the money. I mean, that's over 12 months. But
yeah.
But still, it's not the idea that you – and by the way – somebody can't get a sandwich. Listen, they're feeding them around the clock over here.
That's Illinois has something really. Three meals every day.
Oh man, yeah, well so. That's not quite, and it's not 21 meals, but you're right. You're right.
Yeah,
and so they're feeding them and they're giving them money and they're giving them an education and I agree that's maybe not enough, but I don't know how you break it. I don't know how you do it when you got so many athletes.
Yeah, that's a longer conversation that we can have another day.
I know it was over $1 million when. Mike Thomas, when he was here, said the thing that they did with the food increases was over $1 million, and then you had the stipend, which was, I don't know, that was definitely over $1 million, and so it's a lot of money being poured back into the athletes, but again, it obviously isn't enough for some.
Yeah, that's an interesting situation how they'd be able to figure that out. Dan in Champaign says, Lauren, where is Craig Swooped today?
I don't know.
Yep.
I heard his name. That's the second time I heard his name today, but I suppose he's in Florida, but I don't know that.
CJ texts in on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Illini fan should be very nervous. A large, heavy sneaker is about to fall on the basketball program. Underwood certainly left his prior position in an awful hurry after only a year. You know, that could have, this situation could have absolutely nothing to do with it. You're entitled to your opinion. You're entitled to read into that's a situation. He saw an opportunity to leave, and that's why he left. If he knew what was going on, we'll find out at some point, possibly, maybe, if there's any kind of evidence out there.
If he knew what was going on, he's gone.
Yeah, if he knew what was going on, and Josh gets wind of it, yeah, probably. But right now, you know, Josh and Brad. The reason there was a delay in Josh putting out a statement earlier this week, he wanted to have a face-to-face meeting with Brad. So I'm sure they had a discussion about what Brad knows and what Brad doesn't know, and when he knew it, if he knew anything. And then Josh put out his statement. So we'll. This is very early on, and the FBI says it's an ongoing investigation. The NCAA hasn't even started theirs yet, so this is going to go on for a really long time. Hopefully not as long as North Carolina's investigation, because if that's the case, we're going to be talking about that for a long, long time. And Benny texts in, if George can't prove that he should get an opportunity to prove himself, he should go someplace else. Benny also texts in, what would Bruce Pearl know about inappropriate behavior? That's probably sarcasm there, I would imagine. Bill texts in, what did we expect to compete, be able to score, make some plays, make adjustments, and hearing Lovey say we're not a passing team on the post-game show was an embarrassment. George is a better passer, but he refused to give him a look. And like Lauren said many times on the show, the game plan was to run the football. I would like to see Mike Epstein get more carries. I would like to see maybe some reverses with Mikey Dudek. But that's not what happened last night. And Nebraska, I know they beat up the secondary. They beat up the defensive line and did pretty much what they wanted.
Yeah, well, I only brought it up because people said, well, I can't understand what they were doing. I understand what they were doing. I mean, perfectly obvious. And when you run 18 out of 20 plays, when you run the ball 18 out of 20 plays and you have the quarterback running all over the place, that's what the game plan was.
That's what happens. It does. Bill from San Jose, a different Bill. After seeing Washington State beat USC last night, I have to ask why Illinois didn't hire Mike Leach. I can't believe we're getting this question this morning. Guys, who was available rather than Tim Beckman? Did they talk to Leach at all, Bill in San Jose? I don't know if they talked to Leach. Another name I heard, you know, why didn't we go get P.J. Fleck? Look how exciting he is, and you know, he likes to have a lot of fun. I don't know if that's going to work out at Minnesota. It's way too early to tell. He's only had a few games, and so I'm not going to get, well, Illinois isn't good right now. Folks, Illinois wasn't supposed to be good this year. If they make a bowl game this year, if they figure out a way to do that, which I don't think that's going to happen, but if they figure out a way to make a bowl game, that's a miraculous effort. This team is not supposed to win this year at a high level. This was expected. We've been telling you this for months. I guess I don't understand why people are so upset at this point. I mean, we've been going around about this the whole show, I guess.
I went over and saw exactly what I expected.
Yeah, I did not expect a 28-6 defeat. I don't think Nebraska is very good. They're just not.
They're not.
They're not. So they shouldn't beat Illinois 28-6. But at the same time, with the caveat, their linemen on both sides of the ball are bigger and more experienced, and that is where the game is won. If Illinois has an offensive line and a little bit better quarterback play, Illinois is going to score some more points. But
yeah, and they could have scored. I mean, they were down there twice.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you got first down and three. You figure you're going to score, but they didn't.
217 texter on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Just a few more texts to get to, and we'll wrap up the show today. I'm sorry, but I disagree. Crouch makes us one-dimensional. The defense knows he can't pass consistently. When George plays, the defense has to respect the pass. That is where our best players are in the passing game. The pass will open up the running game for the running backs. George gets rid of the ball fast. You guys say he is prone to interceptions. He was hit throwing those two at USF, causing the ball to go owry. My friend and I left with 13 minutes to go. We were disgusted at no quarterback change. We never leave early. Several exclamation marks. Well, he might get rid of the ball fast, but the way the offensive line was playing last night for the Illini.
He better get rid of it.
Yeah, he better get rid of it faster. And so, I don't think he would have had a lot of time last night. Chase was running for his life. And I have one final text from Benny in the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. I don't see the Illini winning another game this season. Well, we'll find out. It's early, but it's gonna be tough. Well, thanks to our guest today, Mike Pearson, of course, on the book Illini Legends List and Lore. It's a fantastic book. Again, it's not like a chapters based book. It's just a history of Illini athletics, what was going on in America at the time of those each individual years. So definitely get your hands on that. Lauren has said the same thing. Thanks to Jeff Greer, the Louisville Courier Journal, for his thoughts on the Louisville situation, the college basketball scandal. Always good to talk to him. Will Leach, former Deadspin founder, from Mattoon, and Jerry Colangelo, former Illini. The director of USA Basketball. Appreciate his time. Thanks to Scott Beatty for getting the Brad Underwood sound. Thanks to Evan Kahn, our producer, engineer today. And thanks for everyone with their calls and text. Lauren, thank you so much today. It's a
See
long
you later.
Show, and the extra check is in the mail for your performance today.
See you later.
See you. Have a great weekend, everybody.